Now, six Republican-led states and two individuals are challenging President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan at the U.S. Supreme Court. In August of last year, Biden announced his plan for anyone making less than $125,000 a year. It would forgive $10,000 to students with federal loan debt, 20,000 students with that debt who had a Pell Grant. 26 million borrowers applied since then, but the loan forgiveness may or may not happen depending on the Supreme Court's ruling. The court heard arguments in that case yesterday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you hoping comes out of this case? Do you have questions about what's at stake, what the Supreme Court is reviewing in this challenge? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Eric Caspers, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire, director of the university's Center for Constitutional Studies. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start us off by telling us why this case ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court? What are the basics of this challenge?
Yeah, sure. Well, the case itself is, it basically raises two questions. One of them relates to whether or not the executive branch has the power to implement this plan. And the plan itself is based off of what's called the HEROES Act, which HEROES there is an acronym standing for Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students Act. That was passed after 9/11 to make changes to student loan programs during emergencies. And that program was actually used by the Trump administration in 2020 to suspend student loan repayments and interest accrual because of COVID-19. It's now being cited as the law the Biden administration is using to forgive student loan debts, as you mentioned earlier, in some significant amounts. And so that is what is the basic challenge from the plaintiffs in these two cases before the court, is whether or not the executive branch was delegated that authority by Congress. There's also the threshold question before that one, which is whether or not the plaintiffs that have brought these cases have legal standing to actually challenge the legality of the program in court.
Let's get to that. What did Congress authorize here question. I want to listen to Justice Brett Kavanaugh talking to Nebraska's Solicitor General about that HEROES Act you were just mentioning. Here is a listen to, I guess, a key word in the original statute.
But what do you do with the word waive? That is an extremely broad word. Why not just read that as written?
Your Honor, I believe we are reading it as written. Waive means to excuse compliance with an existing obligation, and what the Secretary is purporting to do here is to change existing loan discharge program. The Secretary is not dealing with any of these existing provisions that he purports to cite. He's not changing anything within them. He's frankly ignoring what's there and creating a brand new program, and that's not within the language of this statute.
That's the word waive, W-A-I-V-E. How much hangs on, Eric, what Congress meant by that, the breadth of the authority that they were trying to give the executive branch, the presidency here?
Well, yeah, on the substantive question of whether or not this authority was delegated by Congress to the executive branch, the meaning of that word waive, or how the Supreme Court interprets that word, there's a lot that would hang on that. The exact language in the relevant statute there in the HEROES Act says that the Secretary of Education can waive or modify any statutory or regulatory provision applicable to student aid programs when necessary in connection with a war or other military operation or national emergency. And so yesterday there was some significant back and forth on what that word waive means. The position that was taken by the U.S. government, by the Solicitor General's office, is that waive can, if you waive something, for instance, if you're waiving a requirement, it can, you know, negate something entirely in terms of that requirement. And so the argument from the federal government is that this is exactly what Congress was contemplating, is the ability to waive those financial obligations by borrowers entirely. On the other hand, what you saw from the parties raising the lawsuits is that the use of the word waive and modify, they were arguing, was chosen very carefully by Congress. Congress did not say cancel or cancellation. And so if you want to read it in the sense that Congress didn't say cancel, it didn't specifically deal with what's being characterized as discharging this obligation entirely for a certain amount of borrowing, then this is not authorized by the statute. Part of what it really comes down to, which we can get into now or later, is the U.S. Supreme Court in some of its decisions, especially last year in a case called West Virginia versus the Environmental Protection Agency, it clarified what it means when it discusses what's called the major questions mm-hmm. doctrine. And with that doctrine, the court says that Congress has to speak clearly if it wishes to assign an agency decisions of what the court calls vast economic and political significance. So because of those past decisions, there's a real question as to whether or not the court will let this program stand, because it is one of these vast economic programs dealing with hundreds of billions of dollars.
Bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Tina is with us in Lake Geneva. Tina, hello.
Hi. So I just really feel sad for this generation. My son voted for Biden specifically on this premise. He applied for the $20,000. He was told that, got an email saying that it was, his application was accepted and it would be approved. And then another email shortly after saying, oh, wait a minute, not so much. So I think it's a fraudulent premise. I think we all knew from the beginning of its inception what this was going to be. And I don't think it's fair now after the fact to say, oh, wait, no, wait, don't wait. To get hung up on semantics of wording. I don't think that's right. I think it's just not fair.
Tina, thanks a lot for the call. Eric, the semantics of the wording could have a big impact on Tina's son and other people applying here.
Yeah, it could. And, there is, on the one hand, kind of the big policy question. And there were, of course, a significant percentage of the population that supports this plan. But even if the program is popular, part of what the courts are going to look at if something gets filed as a case like this is whether or not everything was done procedurally correctly, and whether or not, again, when the executive branch takes action like this, whether they were authorized to do so by Congress. It certainly, as the Solicitor General was arguing yesterday, the word waive can be interpreted in that way to authorize what was done here. But sometimes it will come down to, the justices, if they want to be very textualist about it, it's not uncommon for them to, look up these words in the dictionary and to use the definitions there to kind of guide them as to how to interpret the meaning of that word.
Thanks for the call, Tina. We're talking to Eric Casper, political science professor at UW-Eau Claire. Look at the U.S. Supreme Court hearing yesterday on President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want the U.S. Supreme Court to approve this plan or reject it? Do you think that whatever you think of the policy itself, do you think it's a case of a president overstepping their authority? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Eric Casper, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire, with us to talk about a court challenge to President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in that case yesterday. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions or your thoughts. Eric, I want to give a listen to another justice. This is Justice Sonia Sotomayor, talking about the possible impact of turning back on this loan forgiveness plan.
The evidence is clear that many of them will have to default. Their financial situation will be even worse, because once you default, the hardship on you is exponentially greater. You can't get credit. You're going to pay higher prices for things. They are going to continue to suffer from this pandemic in a way that the general population doesn't. And what you're saying is, now we're going to give judges the right to decide how much aid to give them.
And it sounds, Eric, like Justice Sotomayor is leaning toward that argument that under this HEROES Act, this constitutes an emergency measure that would give the executive branch this authority. What do you make of that?
Yeah, she was. And it's an argument that was also being made by the Solicitor General, because that's one of the requirements in the HEROES Act, that this would be for a war or some sort of national emergency. And the argument in that regard is that, and this was the exact language used by the Solicitor General, it was a once in the COVID-19 is a once in a century pandemic. And in that regard, more than a million Americans have died from it. Many more have been hospitalized. And with businesses being shut down and people being put out of work and unable to pay their bills, that the argument is that, well, the HEROES Act was written to deal with just this sort of national and even global emergency. And so, therefore, the Secretary of Education can implement this relief plan. The plaintiffs in the case were saying, well, if there was a national emergency, that, you know, we're at the end of that. And so, therefore, even if there was the opportunity to use this act earlier during the pandemic, that delegation was limited to a time when you really have an emergency that is ongoing. And if we're no longer in what the administration would characterize as a national emergency, then the plaintiff's argument is that, well, the ability to implement the HEROES Act to do something like this, that time has passed.
Let's go back to our callers now. Betty is with us in Delavan. Betty, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, you're talking about this forgiveness of student loans. My son worked hard as a busboy, saved $10,000 of his tips and his pay to pay for Madison first year by himself, and then he paid cash the rest of the 4 years. So should he get some payback for that? It's silly. You go to school, you take out a loan, you pay your loans back.
Betty, thanks for the call. This has been a policy argument about this, Eric, but I think it also came up in the court hearings yesterday, the idea of, is this unfair to people, as Betty's son did, paid their way through college, or to people who don't go to college at all?
Yeah, that came up in two different ways yesterday. One is that one of the two lawsuits was filed by borrowers who either had loans held by commercial lenders, and therefore they were not eligible for any of this relief, or they weren't eligible for the full $20,000 because they didn't receive a Pell Grant. And so at least those plaintiffs were arguing that, look, we have loans, we're not getting them forgiven, or we're not giving as much that's being forgiven. And that was the kind of the basis of their lawsuit challenging the legality of the program. There was also, during oral argument, a statement that was made by Chief Justice Roberts. He was questioning the fairness of the student debt relief when there are other people who have taken out loans for other purposes, such as to if you wanted to start a business and those loans weren't being forgiven. There was a little bit of pushback on that in terms of, is that an argument about the legality of the program versus there being a policy argument? But on the initial threshold question of standing, whether or not someone whose loans are not eligible for this relief can even bring the lawsuit, that was part of what was discussed in front of the Supreme Court yesterday.
And staying with thanks again for that call, Betty. Staying with standing, the states involved, there are questions about, well, do they have standing? What was the argument there?
Yeah, the argument there came down to largely this Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority, which goes by the acronym of MOHELA. It's a state creation to hold and service student loans. It's kind of a quasi-independent entity. And so the question there is, well, is it connected to Missouri enough so that, you know, the state can file this lawsuit on behalf of this MOHELA, or this type of state-created authority? The states obviously were arguing that they did have standing. The Solicitor General's office on behalf of the federal government was saying that, no, I mean, the MOHELA and these types of agencies, if they have their own ability to file a lawsuit, then they should do that on their own and not have the states doing it for them, because, I mean, the states aren't the ones who are suffering the real injury. Now, the interesting thing about that is even the Solicitor General's office admitted that if this other entity, this Mohila, for instance, would have standing if it sued, then that could lead to either potentially the justices overlooking the standing issue because of the inevitability of Mohila just coming back and filing its own lawsuit as its own entity rather than having the state do it for them. So if they were to rule against the states having standing, it wouldn't necessarily be the end of the case, and it could be back in courts.
Time for one more caller. Carol is with us in Milwaukee. Carol, hi.
Hello. I was thinking about the word waive, and couldn't they ask the senators who passed the law, since they're probably still living, and the congressmen what they meant by that word?
Carol, thanks for the call. And Carol points us toward a great question to close with. Eric, justices at all levels have to figure out what members of Congress meant when they wrote legislation. Is it as simple as going and asking them, or what?
Well, not at the Supreme Court level. You know, potentially, you know, calling someone as a witness in a trial level situation. I mean, that's not unheard of if they were connected to getting the legislation passed. And there's actually a disagreement amongst the justices and in the legal community, you know, how much stock should you put into legislative intent as far as going back to the records in Congress to see what they were saying in floor debate and what they were introducing while they were debating the legislation versus just looking at the text as it's written and then, you know, using other sources to try and interpret that language. But to that point, the justices could, when they go back and decide how they're going to handle this case, in their opinion, they could go back and cite some of the things that were said in the House or in the Senate when this legislation was being debated.
Carol, thanks for that call. And Eric, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Eric Casper, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, director there of the Center for Constitutional Studies. He joined us today to talk about challenges facing President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday on a lawsuit challenging that plan. A verdict, a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court, not expected till spring at the very earliest, possibly not until this summer. If you have more questions about what this all means, what it might mean for you individually, let us know and we can try to figure out those answers for you. You can email anytime, ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.